You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's estimated that 800,000 people were killed during the Rwandan genocide in 1994. That death toll is a much better known statistic than this one, though. An estimated 20,000 children were born from rapes committed during the genocide. Photojournalist Jonathan Turgovnik has collected the stories and portraits of several of these mothers and their children in his book, Intended Consequences, Rwandan Children Born of Rape. It's published by the Aperture Foundation and accompanies an exhibition at the Aperture Gallery in Chelsea, now open. I'm very pleased that they both bring Jonathan Turgovnik to the show. Hi.
Hi.
Now, there are many violent conflicts in the world right now. Why did you choose to revisit a 15-year-old trauma?
Well, it all started with an assignment I had for Newsweek magazine in 2006, where I was sent to East Africa to work on a story for the 25th anniversary for HIV/AIDS. And while in Rwanda, the reporter and I was with, we met a woman named Margaret that was brutally raped. Her whole family was just murdered in front of her. Contracted HIV from those rapes, but in that interview also found out that she became pregnant and had a baby boy. And that just threw me off immediately, and I said, how many kids like this are in Rwanda? I found out there are about 20,000 children born out of the rapes, and decided to go back to Rwanda to document their stories. Now, the reason why I think I decided to do it in Rwanda, of course, is because of that initial trip, and it touched me so much. But, you know, the women that are going through sexual violence now and brutal rapes in Darfur, but also in Congo, which is just a neighboring to Rwanda.
And earlier in the former Yugoslavia.
Exactly. And in many places. It's so fresh on them that it would be very, very difficult to talk to them about those experiences.
But you also mentioned HIV/AIDS. Is that a particular problem in this genocide, in this situation?
Absolutely. You know, HIV was used as a weapon of war in the Rwandan genocide. And a lot of these women were actually infected with HIV deliberately. Their whole families were murdered in front of them. They were brutally raped and left to live in misery, so to speak. A lot of the women were so, we're leaving you alive, so you die in misery.
And is that why you've called your title Intended Consequence?
Absolutely. It's one of the reasons. I think that a lot of these crimes that were committed against these women, especially the sexual crimes, were very much intended. And the consequences that they live with, this is really about the consequences that they live them with now, were intended.
Was rape a factor in the Rwandan situation from the start? Or is this something that developed as the madness got worse and worse?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that it's estimated about 500,000 women were raped during the Rwandan genocide, and I think it's something that developed with this kind of rampage of killing and power that these Hutu militiamen inflicted on the people, and it was one of the byproducts of the genocide.
Well, in most cases, the victims were Tutsis, although there were also Hutu moderates who were killed in the genocide. I don't know whether some of the women you spoke to were Hutu as well.
One. I was able to meet one Hutu woman. It happened by chance. And it was a very interesting story, in fact, because she was married to a Tutsi man. And a lot of, actually, you know, Hutu and Tutsis were living together very calmly and peacefully before the genocide. And this woman was married to a Tutsi man, and her husband was murdered immediately. She then took her children. They had three children. And she decided to travel to the village she was born in because she felt maybe because it's a more, there are more Hutu population there, she'll be safer. But when she got to a roadblock, these militiamen immediately saw her. They identified her as a Hutu from her features. But they immediately said, but these kids are bad. You're okay, but these kids are bad. And immediately murdered two of her children in front of her.
Because they were mixed ethnically.
Exactly. And then she was able to escape with one of those children. But she talks about, you know, I asked her, what are your feelings towards Hutus today? And she said, you know, to be honest, I'm one of them, but they are animals. What they did in this genocide, what they did to the Tutsi population is unforgivable.
Well, since there were an awful lot of children who came from mixed marriages, this must be a very complicated society. But if people do identify as Hutu and as Tutsi, what's the primary ethnic identity of a child who's born from the rape of a Tutsi woman by a Hutu man?
It's very complex. And one of the biggest problems these women and the children are dealing with, and this is why I worked on this project, is the isolation they live in and the rejection they face.
Because they're stigmatized for being raped? The victims are then blamed?
Exactly. They're stigmatized in a very severe way for many reasons. The stigma associated with rape.
But they're the victims. They were innocent.
Yeah, but in African culture, the thinking is very different from how we think about these things. You know, we're here, if we are a victim of a crime or a rape or anything else, you know, your family is your safety net. In Africa, it's not so much that way because the stigma is so severe that they reject the family. Some of the women that I photographed in interview said, if they had any surviving relatives. One said to me, you know, my uncle said, you can come into this house, but without this child.
Because the child is seen as a Hutu at this point.
And a Hutu. And he said the father of this child murdered our whole entire family. We cannot accept this child back into this house.
Now, these kids are 15 years old. So how aware are they of the circumstances of their lives and their births?
Most of the women that I interviewed and photographed did not tell their children yet the circumstances of how they were born. But they all told me that they think the children know. Because, again, if you're a single mother with a 14-year-old kid that just physically looks a mix of Tutsi and Hutu, it's very easy to come to the conclusion of the circumstances of how you were born. And because of that, you know, the kids go to school and kids say things to them, your father is a militiaman, you're a son of a militiaman, and they come home and the mothers deny it. But the mothers know that they'll have to tell them at some point.
How do the mothers feel about their kids? I'd imagine they have conflicting feelings, not just purely maternal.
Absolutely. The relationships are very complex, and they range from women saying outright, we do not love our children, to women saying, we live for our children. All our family was killed. This is the only family we have right now, so we love our children. But some of the women say, you know, it's very hard for us to love this child because of the circumstances.
My guest is Jonathan Togovnik, who has produced the photographs and the interviews for a book called Intended Consequences, Rwandan Children Born of Rape. It's published by Aperture. There's also an exhibit. Now, there are 31 pictures in the exhibit. How many pictures in the book?
There are 60 pictures in the book. 30 are the portraits of the mothers and children, and then there are 30 portraits of the children alone.
How many of them are going to be alive in the next few years? Because you mentioned HIV/AIDS. Are they being treated for HIV?
Luckily, most of them are getting ARVs, antiretroviral therapy, from the government and from other organizations on the ground to treat the HIV they have. But because they, in addition to the multiple levels of trauma they live with because of what they went through and what they're still dealing with, they're also, in addition to that, they're very poor. It's extreme poverty. And
most of these women are living in rural areas?
Most of them are living in rural areas. But, you know, I made a point to travel throughout the whole country to show that this was not an isolated incident. I was in the most remote areas as well as the capital in other cities. And everywhere you go, you know, unfortunately, you can find these children that were born out of the rapes.
How do you get people to talk about this sort of thing? It's hard enough for people to talk about rape in our society.
As I said, you know, one of the biggest problems they have is the isolation associated with because of the stigma they deal with. Most of them do not even seek help because of that, because they don't want to reveal their stories. And the way we approached it in terms of finding them was sending social workers to the villages and slowly identifying them in a confidential way, explaining to them once they find them that I'm there to collect their testimonies and to photograph them, and only when they agreed then I would come and interview them and photograph them.
The portraits have some things in common. There's a mother and child sitting or standing together set against the local landscape. They look solemn. Is this a composition you chose?
The process of creating the photographs was important for me to photograph them in and or around the environment where they live. And I would decide where I want to compose the image in terms of the landscape, the composition, but then I would ask them to go to that place and stand there or sit there. But I would let them kind of as much as I could be natural with each other. And it was very interesting to see the relationship of the children and the mothers from how they interacted in the image, to the camera. Mm-hmm. It took time. Most of the images that were actually selected for the book or for the exhibition are from the end session of making these photographs, because it took them time to get used to me being there and to be natural. But it was interesting. Some were embracing, some were just apart, and you could learn a lot about the relationship from that.
Well, it is interesting that you break the silence surrounding these children by using a nonverbal medium, the photograph. And yet we can read so much into what's going on just by looking at their faces.
Well, I hope that's the case. I mean, it's, as you said, it's very hard to document a story that happened 15 years ago. The text here, the testimonies are as important as the photographs, but I feel personally that the faces of the mothers, you could see a lot of suffering in that face.
Well, what was your ultimate goal here? Documentary journalism, make art, or be an advocate for these people?
I think all of the above. You know, I'm a photojournalist in training, but I approached this specific project in portraiture rather than just a more reportage documentary manner. In the first, you know, and of course the idea was to create awareness around the subject and the consequences of sexual violence and genocide. But for the first time in my career, I also wanted to do something about it. And I actually founded a foundation called Foundation Rwanda that supports the secondary school education of these children and links these mothers to psychological and medical help they need. Because the last question I always ask when I interview them is, what are your hopes for the future of these children? And they all look at me with this blank expression and say, future, I mean, we can't even think about the future. We don't know if we're going to have food the next day. So, but if you would have the means, what would be your hopes? And they all said education for our children. If we know we can keep these kids in school, we know they'll be able to provide for themselves in the future. And this is why we started this foundation that will support their education.
It's called Foundation Rwanda.
Yes.
Who runs it?
Basically me and Jules Schell, which is the executive director. It's just both of us running the foundation, and we're in a very grassroots foundation, but if people are interested, they could see it at foundationrwanda.org. We started our first program with the first 150 kids that started school this January, and we're hoping to grow it as we go.
Well, the world pretty much ignored the genocide when it was happening. Is the world any better about Rwanda these days? Just one other question. Is the whole situation complicated by the fact that the Rwandan government hasn't turned out to be as good as one might have hoped?
Well, the world is a lot more supportive to Rwanda now, post genocide, and there are a lot of support. The economic development is huge, and it's a very complex issue. This specific issue of the women, rape in general in Africa, it's such a taboo. You know, you don't speak about
it. But this sort of thing has happened elsewhere. We've seen it in Asia. We've seen it in Latin America as well.
Yeah.
I guess it's what people do when they want to humiliate an enemy.
I agree. But one of the things I noticed, not that I'm discounting it from any other conflict, the level of brutality inflicted on these women and in the stories that they told me are just unimaginable. You cannot make it up to the level of brutality. And the idea that we're able to survive that is just amazing for me.
Didn't you begin as a combat photographer?
I started in the Israeli army as a photographer. That was kind of my initial training, and then I came to New
York. Does that inure you to seeing the worst things in the world?
I don't think so. You know, I'm not a conflict photographer right now. I don't really cover any wars or anything. A lot of my work is actually post-conflict and looking at the victims of war. And this is what I try to document and work on, you know, issues and stories that I feel are underreported or not reported enough, including this one. And, you know, the women had, I felt their need to tell their story outside of Rwanda. Of course, they do not want their communities to know about this because they're going to be further stigmatized. But they really played it. They said, please take these stories and tell the world, not, you know, the world that did not help us then, to see the consequences we're living with now. And this is why, you know, the idea of using photography to communicate that, I felt would be the best way. And this is why we have the exhibition that it's Aperture now, and the book is going to come out on April 7th, which is the 15th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide.
And the book is Intended Consequences, Rwandan Children Born of Rape, published by Aperture. The exhibit is at the Aperture Gallery at 547 West 27th Street, open now through May 7th. And people can also, listeners can also see a slideshow of some of the images from the book on our show page. We've posted them on our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for coming by today to talk about all of this. Jonathan Torgovnik, Torgovnik.
Thank you very much.